Hello, Eleanor. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm excited for our conversation today. You've been doing a lot of interesting work lately. You know, you're a coach, a mentor, a blogger, an author. You've recently come out with a book that has a very intriguing title, which is called Why Losing Your Job Could Be the Best Thing That Ever Happened to You. And it's wonderful. I've read it and I really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to our conversation today. So thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you very much for reading it. That's a nice surprise. It's really weird when you create stuff, you always get a shock when people actually have read something or heard what you've done. So thank you.
Yeah, it is strange. I mean, when I started the podcast and people would come up to me and they'd start talking to me about it, I'd be like, you listen to it? You know, like, I mean, I know that was the intention, but like when it's really happening, you're like, oh, what, you know, the sort of like self awareness pops in. And but I mean, how has the feedback been for the book so far?
Yeah, it's been amazing. I think it's been one of those very strange kind of experiences where I wrote the book a couple of years ago, started as a blog, and then I pulled it all together and decided to create it as a book. I got a book deal with Penguin, but that slows the process down to a degree. So it didn't come out until November 2020. And of course, at that point, we were in the middle of lockdown. So everyone kind of thought, oh, you've written a blog about a book about losing your job because everyone's losing their job. And I was like, no, I wouldn't do that. That feels really uncomfortable. I've written this a long time ago, but it just so happens that's when it's coming out. But the feedback has been great. People have really responded to it. They've got the message. It's a message of hope. It's not a message that says lose your job and become a millionaire overnight. It's a message that says lose your job and be okay. It's going to be all right. So yeah, I think the feedback has been great.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, it would make sense to me, you know, when I was reading it, like, that was the message that came through, where it was like, well, here are some, you know, you outline some very good steps that people can take and just basically the process of change that happens in people's lives. And it's specifically geared towards, you know, losing your job and trying to figure out a new path and reinvent your future and things like that, as sort of taking it as an opportunity, but not in a, you know, sort of just positive, naive mindset of like, oh, it's fine, you know, you'll do something else, or, you know, one of those kind of like cliches. It's more like, no, here's what's going to happen. It's going to suck for a while, but it doesn't only suck. And it's a wonderful opportunity if you allow yourself to have that opportunity to really explore your horizons, find out what's meaningful to you, sorry, and then you know, how you can take actionable steps towards achieving that, whatever it might be. And it's not necessarily for, you know, millions of wealth or whatever it is. It's just finding a passion or pursuing a dream or something like that. And it just shows that, you know, in life, change happens, drastic change happens a lot of the time, and out of your control. And, you know, it's how you sort of respond to that will determine whether it sort of crushes you or not. And you've also opened a consulting business on this as well, hey, called Another Door.
Yeah, that was Another Door was originally the blog, which is where maybe the thought all was kind of created. So it's kind of another message for people to a degree that when I was made redundant, when I lost my job, somebody came up to me within an hour of me getting that news and said that dreaded cliche of, oh, well, you know, when one door closes, another door opens. And it was so infuriating at that moment in time. Like, I didn't want to hear that. I just lost my job. I was quite enjoying my job. Thanks very much. I don't need to hear that. So I sort of leaned into it to a degree and thought, wow, why has that annoyed me so much? You know, that person was only trying to be encouraging and kind. So that is really where the blog started, because I thought, well, hang on a minute, let's embrace this, let's own it. And so the cliche that annoyed me so much, I decided, okay, that's what I'm going to call my blog. I'm going to call it Another Door, and I'm going to explore what this is all about. Instead of getting cross and wasting my energy on crossness that doesn't help me at all, I'm going to own it. And so that kind of is where it started, and it grew. And yes, now it's part of a business of coaching and this experience that we run with people to help them find opportunity or at least some sort of possibilities when they're feeling like everything is lost.
Yeah, and that's great because, you know, like, as you say, when something upends your whole life, you know, you don't want someone to just be like, hey, that's fine, don't worry about it. Like, or, you know, like, oh, maybe it's a good thing. I mean, you know, at that moment, that rage can certainly come through. But good for you for leaning in and being like, well, I'm going to make the most of this, you know, infuriating comment and translate it into a whole business. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, it took some time, but you got there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Nothing's overnight. It's starting. Everything is about starting a journey, as cliched as that is. But, you know, it's about starting a different path and saying, okay, I'm going to go exploring down a different avenue, and that's fine. I'm going to get things wrong. I'm going to fail, but it's fine. But I think cliche, yeah, I mean, I've got a section on it in the book because, you know, cliche bingo, because, you know, it is that thing that comes along and annoys us at all sorts of moments in time in our life. You know, how many times has something happened to us and someone offers us the gift of cliche, like, oh, well, you know, it's fate, and oh, well, you know, all of this stuff. And you're like, oh my goodness, how is this helping? So yeah, I even wrote cliche bingo into the book because I thought, you know what? We've all got to deal with cliches. And sometimes they're very irritating, but sometimes we can say, okay, it's given with kindness and that's fine.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's like the cliches often have sort of embedded wisdom in them, right?
Yeah.
And while they may be true, they're just not particularly helpful at that point. And so, but as you're right, it comes from a place of compassion where people are trying to just, you know, be positive or be supportive and they don't know what else to say. I think you even mentioned that in the book. It's a quote from like Russell Brand or something like that, who I love. He's fantastic with language and just expression. And he says something like, you know, people use cliches when they have nothing else to say or something like that.
And saves us from thinking. Yeah. That's exactly it.
But it also communicates a message of, you know, good intention and hope or whatever it is without trying to go too deep, I suppose. In terms of like how the process of change works, right? Like, It obviously is different for different people, and in different situations, you know, things make more or less of an impact, but it's really like a hell of a journey that people go through, right? And there's many stages to it, and they're often very emotional in that, you know, a whole section of your life is now gone, potentially, and you got to figure out how to deal with that and how to move forwards. Despite the immense challenge and difficulty that comes with it and emotional turmoil, you know, whether it's like the fear or the anxiety or the depression or the grief of loss. And it's really difficult for people. And, you know, one of the things that I liked that you had mentioned was that one of the important parts is to have people that are supportive of you, right? Your tribe. And so how do you like encourage people to use the resources of people that are available to them?
Such a good point. There's a few things there. Yes, there's a lot of emotions to deal with, but part of the journey that you go through is understanding that you're in control. At any moment in time, we're all in control of our emotions and our responses. And so some of the work is around that, is around owning it, and is around really tuning into what's going on for you and calming it down. So you, if you can do work on knowing that all of this stuff that's going on in your head, you're creating it, so you can stop it. So having people around you that actually helps you get into that space is the first step. So it's a little bit of work on just making things still. And sometimes I get a bit of pushback from people saying, you know, I haven't got time to slow down. I haven't got time for all of this crap. I've got bills to pay. I've got to solve this problem. But all you're doing with that response is you're cluttering it all up. You're making yourself busy. You're not really clearing space for that result to come. So actually you're making it harder for yourself. And it's a hard message to take in. I certainly wouldn't have taken that in on the first couple of months when I lost my job. I was not in the mood for that at all. But this is why I wrote the book, because if someone can just believe for a minute, oh, okay, I'm creating this hardness. I'm creating that it's difficult, that it's awful. I'm telling myself this story, and I can also change the story and say, actually, I'm hopeful. Actually, I believe that something good is going to come from this. And if you can do the work to start flipping on that, and then build a collection of people around you, or it's not necessarily that you've got, you know, actual real people around you, but what's influencing you to think like that? What kind of podcasts are you listening to? What are you watching? What things are you kind of scrolling about on your phone? You know, all of that stuff is what I mean by tribe. It's like, what is the environment you're creating? So yeah, it does. It starts to count, because if you've got people around you, and actually the people around us sometimes, like friends or family, the direct family, they might actually be not helping us. They're holding us in that place of fear, because they're fearful with us. And they're fearful for us, and they're fearful for themselves. So they project all that to you. So often what happens is they can hold you in that space by saying, oh my God, are you all right? You know, have you got a job yet? Are things okay? And they're actually not helping. They're helping you to stay in the place. So you've got to really work on tribe from a point of view of, how am I going to move myself forward to start creating a story of optimism, a story that, actually, I've got this. I'm doing well. I can work on myself. That's what I mean by tribe. It's not always the people around us.
Right. And that makes sense, right? Because what you fill your brain with, so to speak, is going to contribute significantly to how you're feeling and how you think of yourself and what you choose to do and how you choose to respond to things in life, right? And it's exactly right. It's like, well, if you're surrounded by messaging, whether it's coming from people or from your phone or whatever it is, that's, you know, negative or threatening or fearful or fear-inducing, maybe is a better word, like, or creates anxiety or shame or guilt, like, that's going to be a rough challenge to get through that, because then you're dealing with that on top of your own stuff that you're feeling about yourself and about life, right? And so, yeah, I mean, it's good to take a look at just what are you filling your mind with and what's important to keep yourself accountable to, right? So, like, are you like following people or talking to people about good things, or are you talking to people about bad things? You know, do you sort of harbor on all the bad things and how things should have gone differently, or you wish that things were other than they are? And, like, does that really help? I mean, it's good for learning purposes, I suppose, to, you know, learn from your mistakes and things like that. But to stay on that can be a problem, because then you'll just get stuck. And then, you know, where do you go from there if you're just stuck in the mud?
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think you've made a good point there about, you know, we sort of underestimate that, what you've just described, though. Like, what are we taking in? What films are we watching? What TV? What scrolling? Where are we stopping on social media? What are we reading? It's not to be underestimated, as you described. I think you made a great point there, because I get people saying, oh, I haven't got time for, you know, all of this self-help stuff and things. You got time to be on social media, because I've seen you. You know, I have seen you on Facebook and whatever. So yes, you do. So actually, challenge yourself all the time. Stop making excuses. You've definitely got time, but it's what you're choosing to fill yourself with. So yeah, I think it's a really good point you're making about that kind of choice of what you're putting into yourself. Like, not just, we often think about what we're putting into ourselves, like food. We've got to eat healthy to be healthy. Well, you've got to put into your brain healthy stuff to feel healthy in your brain as well. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and I can't remember who said it, but someone has coined the term like mental diet, right?
Yeah.
And it's strange because there's such an amazing like parallel between your food diet and your mental diet, where good, you know, often like junk food and things that are unhealthy, they taste good at the time, right? And but they're full of fats and sugars and salts and all the things that ultimately aren't going to be so good for you. And similarly, you know, if you're scrolling through social media, you get this weird like immediate feedback of you know, just I guess it depends, but there's some like good feelings associated with doing it, even though it's not like true good feelings. Like when you're eating healthy over a long period of time, then that's when you realize, you're like, oh, this is what healthy feels like. You know, you're like, it's not the same kind of good feeling as like eating something delicious that's unhealthy, but it's much deeper. And it's similarly, if you know, can change your sort of habits of social media, which is often more difficult than people imagine it's going to be, right? Because if you just decide one day, you're like, I'm not going on social media anymore, you're going to have a lot of time that you didn't know you had. And if you're not ready for it, you're just going to be sitting doing nothing. And I mean, it's actually a good thing, right? But like, it can be very intimidating and difficult for people to do.
Yeah, it all takes work. That's the point, isn't it? It all takes work. Even stopping things, as you've just described, takes work. And I think that's why sometimes it's easier. People just think, oh, you know, not lazy thinking is not quite right, but just kind of convenient thinking, like what you described, convenient food, convenient thinking is just easier because actually I don't have to do too much work. And I think I'm going to get an instant hit from it. So surely that's the best thing. Whereas you're right, longer term goals, longer term things that you really, really want, they're going to take work.
Yeah. And it's about, you know, one of the other points that you had mentioned in your book is this point of like, I don't know if you call them tiny habits or micro habits or something like that, but, you know, those really incremental changes that grow exponentially as you keep doing them. You know, a lot of the time it feels like if you want to make a change, you got to do these huge drastic things. And, you know, you can easily get motivated. Like, I mean, to me, it happens at night for some reason when I'm like going to sleep. I'm like, okay, tomorrow, you know, I'm going to wake up at this time and then I'm going to do this. And this is what I'm going to eat and exercise and meditate and do all these things that I don't do every day all the time. And so there's this weird, like, imaginary sense of like, oh, I'm just going to do everything all of a sudden and it's going to be good. Whereas in reality, like, no, like that shit takes time to reaccustom your brain and, you know, develop those new neural pathways and sort of transform into a new way of being such that, okay, well, if you want to like start exercising, okay, do 5 minutes. Like, it's not a lot and it won't feel as rewarding, but like, it's a good start. Right? Or you meditate for a few minutes, or you just eat something less unhealthy. And it's like those small steps really start to like make changes, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think the Tiny Habits was from a book and a piece of work. BJ Fogg was the guy who sort of created that thinking. And you're right, it's really powerful because I think we get a bit overwhelmed with all the things we think we should be doing. The big goal feels too far away. And so we just shut down and we think, oh, I'll do nothing. Or it's not right today. It's not the right moment today. So we do nothing. So Tiny Habits really helps you to just take very, very small steps one at a time. And that belief that if you just do something every day, imagine where you could be in sort of 3 months' time, 6 months' time, a year. I think that's really useful for people who want to take losing a job as an opportunity rather than it being, oh, I just need to get another job. That's a different mindset. If you want to completely take it as something like, I'm going to really think about how I want to own this. Is this an opportunity for me to change, upgrade, do something completely different? You're going to have to bring in new practices, because, you know, what made you successful before isn't what's going to make you successful in the next stage. So you're going to have to bring in those small, tiny steps, those different ways of thinking, different ways of learning to do it. So you're right. You know, taking it down to very small things that feel achievable is how you do it. And also, if you do just need to find a job, and that's, you know, some people loved what they were doing and they just want to find something again, exactly the same, which again is absolutely brilliant that they know what they want. It's the same thing though. Just do one or two things a day really well. So don't go press that apply button on LinkedIn 400 times. That's not going to get you what you want. All it's going to get you is 400 rejections, which is going to make you feel even worse. So instead, slow it all down. Make it really clear with yourself. Look, this is what I want. I know that these couple of jobs are absolutely calling to me and they're what I need right now. And I'm going to go for it and put my heart and soul into it. And suddenly you get shifts, you get better shifts because you're more clear and you'll do a better job on the application, on the cover letter, on the interview, whatever it is you need to do. You put something more into it than what anybody else is doing because you really want it. So yeah, that whole concept of slowing down, making it small, definitely works for people.
Yeah, and that slowing down is important because you certainly hit a panic sometimes, right? A panic for time. And whether that's actual or just perceived is, you know, I guess it depends on the person about how, what you sort of need right now. But yeah, I mean, you know, sort of focused work and intentional doing on a few things is going to be much better than sporadic and or erratic behavior and just doing 400 applications and being like, well, you know, what else am I supposed to do or whatever it is. But I think I would imagine that like the people who are drawn to you and to this work that you're doing, like they are looking for something different, right? Because I mean, I'm not sure, this is more of a question, I suppose. It's like, because if I had a job and I lost it and then I was like, I want the same job or something very similar, like that's a pretty good and sort of straightforward path, right? I mean, it might not be easy, I'm not saying that, but it's like, it seems to be like the work that you're doing is for people who have lost their job and have sort of come to this conclusion that, oh, this might be an opportunity for something else, right? For something different, for something more rewarding or fulfilling, and, you know, potentially more financially viable or successful or whatever the word is. But so are those the kind of clients that sort of come to you?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I think there's a mix. So I think ultimately someone loses their job and they will probably reach out in some way. They'll either listen to podcasts that I've done or the Another Door podcast or join our masterclasses, whatever we're doing, they might join it and get curious. So I think the common factor is curiosity of, okay, I've lost my job. Obviously, I need to fix this. I need to do something. How can you help? I think that's the bit. And then what we do is Another Door is like an exploration. So it's, and again, it's in the book of, you have three choices when you lose your job. You can either stick to what you've been doing, what your skill set is, everything you know. It's a very comfortable position. And you just go and get that thing again and you'd be very focused on it. But what we try and push there, because obviously we want to make losing your job a good thing, we want you to push out a little bit and upgrade it in some way. So yeah, go out and get that job again, but keep challenging yourself. So actually think about, how do you want to work? Maybe it's flexible working, location, what kind of companies would be dream companies to work for? What kind of conditions, what salary? So actually, always try and upgrade. So I guess that's our message to someone who does just want another job, which is absolutely perfect and everything that they need. But why not upgrade? Push yourself to really make it a dream job. And what would that look like? So that's the stick. Twist is where you take all of your skill sets, you're comfortable with that, You might have trained for it. You love what you do, but you want to do it in a different way. So maybe you want to teach it. Maybe you want to train it. Maybe you want to talk about it, write about it, create something different with it. So you're twisting it. So still comfort zone, still know what you're doing, but you're doing it in a different way. And then the final one is bust. So you're going to bust it all out. You're going to throw the cards up in the air. You're going to go, whoa, I'm going to do something completely radical and different here. I'm going to learn new stuff, train myself, be a different person. Who knows what you're going to do, but that's your final choice. So it's stick, twist, bust. Those are the three decisions that we talk to. And Another Joy's design and the book is designed to help you explore that and to really think about, okay, what do I want from this? So I kind of think it's for everybody and anyone who's lost a job. But go into it with eyes wide open, curiosity, and believe that maybe, just maybe, there could be something that you maybe not thought of before that comes from it.
Yeah. You know, the truth is, I think that the book or the sort of literature that you've done in general is actually for a much wider audience than just people who have lost their job, right? Because if you do the steps, right, it's an amazing self-reflective exercise of trying to figure out who you are, what you're doing, why you're doing what you're doing. Is it what you want to be doing? You know, and just it's an evaluation of where you're currently at. And then with guided steps of like, well, if there's a change you want to make, which usually there is for people, whether it's sort of small or big. I mean, you know, I guess there's both, but then there's actionable steps that you can take to do that, right? But you first have to know where you are before you know how to to know where you are, then you have to know where you want to be, and then you can figure out how to get from A to B, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why I think it actually extends to just about anyone who's looking to make some improvement or some change in their life, because, yeah, it might not be that you've lost your job, but you could use the same strategies that, you know, many of which that you've outlined to get a promotion or to switch to a different company or to just, you know, maybe start off on a new project that you're looking to do, like a passion project, and figure out how to integrate that into your life. And then maybe one day, you know, you can make that successful. So I think it does actually have a quite a broad reach, you know, and it's great. So, you know, congratulations, I suppose.
Thank you.
One of the areas that I wanted to ask you about was, you speak about the sort of the comfort zone, the stretch zone, and the stress zone, right? Could you explain a little bit about what those three are?
Yeah, so it's we kind of use the comfort zone in various different ways. But one of the messages I try to get across, and what I realized was, we think that comfort is a good thing. Like, we think that maybe that's our goal. So, oh yeah, my goal is to be comfortable and therefore I'll be happy. But actually being uncomfortable can be where the magic sits. You know, it can be where you disrupt your thinking, where you challenge yourself a little bit more and you see beyond a wall that maybe you've built for yourself in the quest for being comfortable. Maybe you haven't really tuned into, well, what am I actually doing? And I think that's why losing your job or any disruption in your life comes along and gives us a little shake and says, yeah, you got a bit comfortable there. You started taking things for granted. You didn't notice things. You stopped thinking what you were doing and you were on pilot. So when you're on autopilot, you kind of just, you know, how many of us get up, get dressed, get on our work, rattle through the emails, get to the end of the day, think, okay, that's a job done, good. We don't stop to think, yeah, but what did I achieve? How am I growing? Am I even paying attention to my family? Am I even doing any of the things that I really, really want to do? Or am I just on autopilot? So the comfort zone can sometimes have created a wall around us that doesn't help us to look beyond. It just helps us to be safe, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's where we're growing and finding fulfillment. So if you step outside the comfort zone and you do something a little bit uncomfortable, but maybe you've always been curious, but you might have started telling yourself, oh, that's not me, I can't do that. All of these things we start telling ourselves. So we stay in comfort zone. If you step out and say, yeah, but what if I tried? What if I just gave something a go? All that happens is you just feel uncomfortable. That's all. And even when I'm saying it now, that doesn't really feel that bad, does it? It's just uncomfortable. It might be a bit embarrassing, but, you know, that could be funny. I've done a lot of embarrassing things trying to try, you know, new things. It goes wrong or whatever. But you have to take it as, well, that's part of growing. So in the uncomfortable zone, which I call the stretch zone, we're just trying stuff. We're just testing it. We're playing in a space where we can go, yeah, but what if? What if I tried? What if I asked somebody something? What if I posted on LinkedIn something that I've always been curious about? What if I approached someone who works for a business that I really want to work for? Now, in the stretch zone, nothing might happen. You might try all of that stuff and actually nothing happens, but actually something might happen. The one thing that will is you'll change. You'll start to go, oh, that wasn't actually that bad. Actually, who cares what happened? Oh, I'll try again. I'll try again. And you'll keep kind of creating this playful space of being brave and confident. So that's the stretch zone. Yes, it feels uncomfortable, but it's good uncomfort. But yes, you're right. There is a third layer to the comfort zone, which is stress. And it's where you're putting yourself under so much pressure. So you're stepping outside, you're stretching yourself, you're doing amazing things, but you haven't managed to just calm and control it and feel like you're kind of owning it. You have let it loose. You have unleashed this thing and it's roaming in your mind and it's become overwhelming and you're overthinking and you're heading to burnout. And that's where the stress zone needs calming back down. Maybe definitely retract back into stretch, if not go back into comfort. Like just calm it all down, be still. And that's when you have to reconnect with, hang on a minute, check back in. What am I doing? Where am I at? One thing at a time. And do all of that work again that we've been talking about. So these kind of zones that I talk about, the comfort zone, the stretch zone or uncomfortable zone, and then stress, yes, they all appear in our lives in various different ways. And it's for us to acknowledge them and say, okay, what am I going to do about this? How can I shift back into a zone where I can take a breather, be okay, and then go again? So that's what is described in the book and in the program we kind of help people through.
Yeah, and you know, you go through that oftentimes multiple times in a day. It's not like you live in one space all the time. I mean, you'll try something new and maybe you try a bit too hard and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like this was too much for me, right? I need to just take it one step back or two steps back or 10 steps back and just go one step forwards, right, into that stretch zone. And I really like your idea of that it's play, right? And that you're just being curious and being open and just exploring things outside of your normal world, right? Your comfort zone. And it's going to happen anyway, right? But if you choose to do it, that's when it becomes much more empowered because it doesn't feel like it's happening to you. You know, which is going to happen as well, right? Like you're going to, like when you lose your job at no choice of your own, like that's going to throw you into the mix, right? You didn't have a choice in that and you're way out of your comfort zone now. But you don't have to be completely crumbled by it, right? And overstressed and burned out. And I mean, I imagine that people can, you know, become burnt out just looking for a new job, never mind at a new job, right? Because the stress that you put on yourself, and I guess, you know, within reason, like, of course, it's going to be stressful and you might have certain responsibilities that you have to uphold and, you know, provide for people and things like that. So it's not like you can just say, oh, well, but there is that sort of sweet spot of like figuring out what's doable and exciting at the same time while still being able to, you know, fulfill your responsibilities, or, you know, maybe you do an interim gig somewhere just to, you know, pay the bills or whatever it is, while knowing that, okay, well, this is just one step towards something else, right? And being able to just be curious and explore. And yeah, I mean, sometimes you're going to embarrass yourself, but who cares? Everyone embarrasses themselves all the time. Like, it happens. What, you know, it, as you say, it's just a bad feeling, but you can handle it if you don't judge yourself for it, or if you don't fear it, or try and, you know, like, shut it down or whatever it is. That actually leads me into another interesting point, was that, like, there's certainly this element of self-care, right, that you promote, where it's, and it's so important for people, right, myself and everyone included. It's like, you have to take care of yourself, because if you don't, it's not going to go well. Even if you think that, you know, your needs are secondary, well, at some point you're going to find out that that's a formula for a disaster, right? For you and for everyone else. No one wants that. The best case scenario for everyone is if you take care of yourself first, and then, you know, you can broaden that to include other people and your community and whatever it is. But not in a selfish way, obviously. It's not like a narcissistic kind of, the only thing that matters is me. But it's just, you know, taking account of what that is. And so how do you find that plays out for people?
Yeah, I think you've made some good points around the self-care and what we believe that is. And you're right, it sometimes people read it as a bit self-indulgent. They think self-care is something that they could do when everything else is fixed. People have very different maybe readings on what that means. But you're right, it's part of the progress that you make. So self-care really is just looking after yourself, making sure you're in a good place, checking in. It's all the things that we described, like checking in with how you're doing, what more help do you need, where are you at, what work do you need to do for yourself. That's all it is to me. And I think it can have, if you do that work, I think it can have an amazing impact on the people around you. So you're right, it's not just about you, it is other people. Because they're now experiencing you being a different person because you worked on yourself. So today I recorded a podcast around this concept I use called Flutter, which is about this moment. And I think it's a real self-care thing. It's a moment where you are about to react. And as humans, we just, on automation, we react to things. But the moment you feel like you're about to react, you flutter. You just take yourself out of the moment for a second and you choose, how am I going to respond? And it creates such a different world you start to live in, for not just you, but for everybody. I'll give you a great example of, you know, I've got a daughter leaving Lego or everywhere. You know, you stand on the Lego. What happens? You react. You're like, ah! Now you got a split second choice to decide, okay, I'm going to stand on this Lego. I'm sick of this Lego. It's everywhere. I've asked you to tidy it up. I'm going to start. I'm getting cross because now I've hurt myself. So I'm going to react by getting cross. Then, you know, all that's going to happen is my daughter's going to get upset. It's going to now cause about a couple of hours of distress for everybody involved because I stood on some Lego. And so, do I want that? No. We were having quite a nice time until that moment in time. So actually what I want is, no, I just want the Lego tidied up. That's, and then, cool, done. So what I'm going to do is grab myself. I'm going to flutter for that second when I'm like, grab it. And I'm now going to choose, what do you actually want? I want still a calm afternoon. So all I'm going to do is go, take a breath, walk away. Come back and go, come on, let's tidy this up. Let's get this sorted. Just hurt my foot. Come on. Brilliant. Done. What have I achieved out of it? I've achieved a really nice afternoon. Everything's tidy. It's cool. Now, some people say, yeah, like that happens. You know, that's not realistic. But it is. You got to work on it. You got to keep working on it. And you will soon start fluttering just by instinct. And so, yeah, every now and again, of course, we all have a moment. Of course we do. We're humans. But if you can reduce those moments, it creates so much more... a better space, and you're actually creating things that you want. Nobody wants an afternoon of upset and frustration, especially when you're trying something new, especially when you're under pressure already to find a job or whatever's going on. Of course, you just want calm and quiet. So that's what I would share with people. That for me is self-care, is do that work. Keep bringing flutter, keep bringing like, okay, what do I want from this? I want calm from it. And keep working on it and you'll get it. So we've all got the choice of reaction at any moment in time. We can choose. So work on it and we'll find a better life already for us.
Yeah, I think that's a great example because, you know, as is with many things, like there's an immediate, especially when it's like painful, whether it's sort of physical or, you know, sort of an emotional or like some sort of jab. Like there is that immediate response of like anger or frustration or however it sort of manifests in you in particular. And you get this like emotional rush of like, let's say in this case, it's like rage, right? And, you know, it's a defense mechanism. Like it makes sense why it's there. And the immediate sort of first step is to just carry that through, right? And be rageful and then, you know, act on that. But that there is a moment where you can essentially decide to not do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of like just self-awareness, but that's where your self-awareness levels are going to really be tested, so to speak.
Because
It's easy if someone says something nice to you, it's easy to be self-aware in that moment, right? But if, when you're stepping on Lego and you know you want to like punch a hole through the wall, you're like, well, okay, well, this is the real test now because this is where I get to make these decisions. And it's like we said earlier, the more you do it, the easier it's going to be, you know, when you start with those micro, or those small, tiny changes. Is it's like, well, it's going to feel weird the first time. And if you've had a habit of, you know, becoming very angry in the past, like let's say towards your daughter or something, the first time you do it, she's also going to be a bit weirded out. She's going to be like, this is unusual, right? But not in a bad way, in a good way, because it's good, it's growth, and it's also it's opting for that place of peace, right?
Yeah,
instead of a place of just chaos and disturbance and things like that. But it is,
it's so true what you're saying. I think it's choice. We've got choice. And we think, well, it was my daughter's fault for leaving the Lego on the floor. It was the Lego's fault for existing. No, it wasn't. It was my choice. Own it. It's you that's responding. It's you that's creating this carnage. It's you that's creating whatever happens next. And you can say that through... it's sort of a metaphor. You can apply it to all sorts. Like that reaction you get when you get rejected from a job, you know, that's the same thing. It's a jolt. It's like stepping on Lego. Oh my God, you open that email, that horrible feeling of like, oh God, you know, oh, you could choose what to do next. You could choose just to go, okay, fine, delete. It's not going to ruin my day. You know, you could choose to say, okay, you know, accept it. I might ask for feedback. I might kind of think something, I might do something next. But you're choosing that. You don't have to feel hurt. You don't have to feel like it's the end of the world. You can just move from it if you want to. So it's definitely something you can bring in all sorts of different ways, just to help you, as you say, keep peace. Keep peace and calm, and that'll be a better day for you.
For sure, and it'll be a better day for everyone. Right. And I think like to me, the sort of distinction is between like reacting and responding. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of the times you don't get to choose what emotions you feel when they happen to you. Right. So like particularly if you're trying to do new things and you're trying to change the way that you do respond or react to different things. So when you get that rejection email, like, it does hurt, right? And in order to move past it, you do have to accept that first, right? So you have to be like, okay, well, I am feeling this, right? Now, do I have to continue feeling this? That's, I think, where the choice comes in, where you get to say, I don't have to keep feeling this. I do feel it, and I, you know, embrace it, so to speak, because to suppress it or try and combat it, that's often going to make it worse for you, right? Because then you're really going to get in a twist in your head. But then, so it's once you're like, okay, this is what I feel. It's okay. It's not nice. It's not comfortable, right? But it's not terrible, or it's not going to kill me. And now I get to choose how to respond to the situation, right? And so maybe it's exactly that. It's you delete it and you're like, okay, I don't want to, you know, deal with that. And so I'm going to just do something else. Or maybe it's do some self-care work, right? Go have a cup of coffee or take a walk or do something nice or whatever it is. Or, I mean, you could choose to just wallow, right? And then that's not really going to be great, but I mean, it might be what just happened. And then if that happens, then that's okay too, because then you get to then respond to what's just happened. So like you can always do it, basically. And you never have to feel bad if you haven't done it up until this point, because now's the time that you can change it and do something, you know, different and better, which I think it's a wonderful message.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah. Hard to do, as we say. We're not belittling this, and we're not pretending it's easy, but it's possible.
Yeah, and human emotions are very difficult, right? Of course. And it, particularly if, you know, you're just new to learning how to become aware of what's going on inside of you, which many of us aren't, right? Because it's not something that's sort of widely taught. But luckily, you know, there's sort of a good movement, I suppose, in the culture these days towards something like that, where it's okay to feel your emotions, whatever they are. And they might be like truly, you know, rough. I mean, particularly with like loss or whatever it is, like, we're not saying that it's a nothing, or that it's easy, or that it doesn't mean anything, or that it's small. Like, no, like, you might be, you know, people become catatonic for a while for sometimes when emotions strike too hot. And that's okay. Because the first step is to just accept that that's the case, right? And then you can do something to move forwards, or at least try. And it's small changes, right? But that power is in all of us to be able to do that. Sometimes you just need someone to sort of tell you that, oh, you know, you can do this if you want. You know. But anyway, I mean, it's interesting. And so the job, being sort of lost for a job, or having lost your job rather, and being thrown into the chaos of the world, like, it's very unsettling, right? And a lot of emotions come up. And I think you even like outlined in your book how it's kind of like the five stages of grief, or it's akin to grieving. And that makes sense too, because, you know, a huge part of your life has just gone, essentially. You know, if you're doing 8-9 hour days or whatever, and all of a sudden you got nothing, that's rough, right? And so being able to just feel what that feels like, to have that taken, and, you know, respond to it in kind, or kindly rather, is it's huge, and it's important, and it's also a huge, big, like, transformational for people, you know. That's why you say it could be the best thing that ever happened to you.
Yeah,
doesn't have to be, I suppose. But yeah, you do I mean, what you're doing is like helping people navigate this tremendous change that's happening, right? And so a lot of your work, I'm assuming, is kind of like quasi counseling kind of work, right? Where you're just coaching people through the experience of it.
Well, I think counseling is a different level. I think that definitely, as you say, when people get stuck too long, and it is starting to feel more on the sort of anxiety and depression spectrum, then that's counselling and therapy sure. The coaching side is more when, yeah, you're just wallowing. You know, you're in a wallow, might be feeling a bit sorry for yourself, might even be sulking a bit. You know, it's all of that sort of stuff that you, perhaps you can, you still got the ability to sort of laugh at yourself and go, yeah, actually, I don't know why I'm feeling so bad today, but I want to change. That's definitely, that's the space. That's the space mm-hmm. that then you can work with, because you're acknowledging, okay, yeah, I can do something about this. You're acknowledging that you got control. You do have control and you can own it. So I think you've made a good point there. You know, there is a difference that some people might genuinely need help for something very specific because it has triggered a depression. That's very different. So yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point you make.
No, I mean, you're right. Like it, I meant like quasi-counseling, like as in, you know, you're sort of being... it's sort somewhat of a counselor. No, of course people, you know, fall into terrible depressions and they should definitely seek help. I mean, both of my parents are psychotherapists, so you know, I'm sort of from that world, and so you know, I have huge respect for the field, and I'm not saying people shouldn't do that if they need it, obviously, but it's about like leaning into the change, right, and helping people helping people through the change and navigating these sort of rough waters that they're going through. And so what I meant was that like you're assisting these people on these emotional roller coasters, so to speak, and sort of just guiding them through the experience and very much normalizing it as well, to say that this happens to just about everyone in this situation, right? So many people feel the same thing as you. And I think that that must be pretty helpful for people as well.
Yeah, it's probably the first thing people say to us. So, you know, that bit around, oh, you've made me feel normal. So I think you're spot on. It's definitely, I think people feel very alone, that they're kind of alone in these thoughts and they're dealing with it themselves. So when they can resonate with, all right, lots of people feel the same, it starts to feel a bit different. So you're right, normalizing is important.
And that shame lifts, right?
Yeah.
That sense of shame of like, you know, I guess, so what's the difference between like shame and guilt, would you say?
So I think... I mean, people react to losing their job in different ways. And one of the things that comes up a lot is the guilt side of it. And when I was doing research for the book, that word came up a lot in the research and in case studies and things that, you know, they felt guilty about losing their job because of probably friends, family, dependents. So there was like a narrative there about what they felt about it. But the other word that came up was shame, and they felt embarrassed. And that's when it's more a belief that perhaps you had control over it, or they weren't good enough, or they've been found out, or it's embarrassing because it's a reflection on themselves. And therefore the internal narrative started to tell a story, a whole different story around, well, you weren't very good at that anyway. You probably, you know, they probably just found you out, and this is what's happened. And then to try and get yourself out of that hole is a whole different game, because now you're going to have to work on that self-belief and getting to know yourself again and reconnecting with, no, I am good. I'm going to have to look backwards to look at all the achievements, to remind myself on all the things that I was enjoying, that I, all the moments that I delivered something amazing, to move forward. So yeah, I think guilt and shame come into it, into that whole kind of messy emotions that you described at the beginning, and often they're the first reaction and before people go into that dip of kind of panic and frustration and confusion, because it's very personal. Sometimes it feels personal when you lose your job, and that's what we try and talk about as well. It's not personal. Try and detach, try and remove yourself from that narrative as quickly as you can, and just stay in that space of, it's irrelevant. All I need to do is think about future and how I'm going to get myself into the future. So if you could change your internal narrative, then you can help yourself get through that next door easier.
Yeah. And it is you know, rather irrelevant why you lost your job. I mean, I suppose
yeah,
to some degree it's not, right? Like, obviously yeah, there's a certain instances where you do need to know, particularly if it was because of something you did, then perhaps it's like, okay, well, maybe you should stop doing that. But, you know, generally speaking, a lot of the time people lose their jobs from business decisions, right? And it's unfortunate that it feels personal. And it certainly does, because you're like, well, was I not doing a good enough job? Am I not good enough for this? You know, should I even try and get another job in this field? Or all these kind of self-defeating questions that you ask yourself when these things happen, because it feels like a personal attack. And it's so important to sort of be able to work through that and come out the other side and be like, well, personal or not, right? Like, there is a path forwards. And, you know, the whole message of your book is that the path forwards might be tremendously better than the path that you were on. And so it's like a blessing in disguise, right?
Yeah.
And there's so much hope that's around if you're looking for it, or if you're just open to it, I suppose.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think that's how we started off this podcast. You said it's a message of hope for people.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great way for us to end as well, because it's true. Like, that's what's important, right? Is it's like, yeah, it sucks and shit goes wrong and it's not good all the time, and, you know, bad things do happen, but there is hope and things do mm-hmm. improve and things get better, and you can take very good steps towards doing that. And so, you know, for anyone who has enjoyed this, I would highly recommend buying the book. I will put a link to it in the description. You know, luckily in today's world, you don't have to order paper copies anymore. Anywhere in the world, you can just order your Kindle version. But yeah, thank you very much for coming on. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Is there anything else you want to promote? Another Door, what's the website for that if people are interested?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Shane. That was great. I love that honest chat, so I very much appreciate it. It's not all easy, as you say, so that's a great message. Yeah, we're on Another Door, so it's www.anotherdoor.co.uk if anyone wants to know anything more. But thank you very much.
Great. Well, hopefully you can come on again sometime in the future. There's a lot for us to discuss. But yeah, until then, we'll speak soon. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye. We'll be right back.